Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the upper part of Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, we want to mention that we're involved in a sugya concerning Nisuch Hayayin Bachutz, the pouring of a wine offering outside of the Beis Hamikdash. We have a Tanaic source that is featured at the top, the second, third line from the top. We begin the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, HaMenasech Shloisha Lugin Yayin Bachutz Chayav. One who pours three lug is a liquid measure of sacrificial wine outside of the Beis HaMikdash, he is guilty of offering outside, Haloas Chutz. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, V'hu Shekitshon B'kli. The violation is violated when he poured the wine from a vessel that had been sanctified. My binayu. The Gemara's question here is, what is their point of difference? What are they arguing? The Rashi says, b'may pligi. In what are they arguing? Omar Rav Ado Breid Rav Yitzchok. He is the first of two opinions as to what is the machlokas, what's the point of difference between these two opinions. He says, Birutse midois iko binayo. In order to appreciate what this is, we will look at the Rashi at the end of the narrow lines. Birutse midos, ma shetzof al svasakli, that which literally floats above the edge of the kli, the meniscus. Utravayu kedushas kli bo. Both opinions hold that in order to be in violation of haloas chutz with regard to the yayin, you have to have a sanctified vessel. Mihu, Rabbonan Savri, birutze midos shalach niskachu. Rabbi Elazar Sofer lo niskachu. The toich kli boinan. According to Rabbonon, the area or the wine that exists above the surface of the kli, the little we're calling arching effect or meniscus, according to the Rabbonon, has holiness to it, is considered sanctified, and therefore that birutze midos, that meniscus, will also be part of the violation of Halas Chutz. According to Rabbi Elazar, though, that upper level of wine is not sanctified. And his opinion is that one has to be, the wine, in order to gain sanctity, has to be within the interior of the vessel. Literally in the interior of the vessel. And otherwise, it's not sanctified. And as such, there won't be a violation of chutz with regard to that amount of wine, the wine that's above the surface level. The next opinion, Rava Breda Rabba Omar, we're back in the Gemara, of course. Rava Breda Rabba says, Kervu nisachim bedboma ika binayu. The point of difference between the two opinions is the issue of whether nisachim, wine offerings, were offered at private altars at the time that private altars in fact were allowed. Generally speaking, we speak about the period of time before the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, even though the issue of Heter Bomos was an intermittent issue, sometimes Mutter and sometimes Osir. The Rashi points out here on the second wide line under the Gemara, Rabo Breda Rabo Amar Tano Kama Lo Boye Kedushas Kli. The first opinion doesn't require vessel sanctity in order to be in violation of haloas chutz with regard to nisuch ha-yayin. And as such, we might point out, as we saw in the end of our previous year, that if you hold that at private altars there was drink offerings, wine offerings, that shows us that the Nesachim never required vessel sanctity. And that's because at private altars, the sacrificial service did not involve sanctified vessels. And Rashi goes on, Ubekarvu Nesachim b'midbar komifligi. The point of difference will be between them. Here Rashi has an expression that's different than the Gemara per se, but it really boils down to the same thing. The issue, according to the way Rashi phrases it, is were Nesachim offered in the Midbar? So, Latana Kama, according to the first opinion, Karvu, Nesachim were offered in the Midbar. And as a result of holding that, the Pasuk that indicates, and this is something we mentioned in our previous year, that there was a command regarding Nesachim upon entrance to Eretz Yisrael, that command was with regard to private altars. That now, in Eretz Yisrael, you can offer drink offerings, wine offerings at private altars. And as we said a moment before, since they were offered, according to this approach, at private altars, there was no Kedushas Kli. The Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, lo karvo, according to Rebbe Elazar Shimon, Nesachim were not offered in the Midbar. Therefore, the command regarding the offering of Nesachim upon entrance to Eretz Yisrael was a command focused on offering Nesachim in the Mishkan. Well, if that's where they are commanded to be offered and not at private altars, then you're in effect telling me that Nesachim will be offered only from sanctified vessels. And of course, if one offers them in an unsanctified vessel, according to this opinion, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, he will not be in violation. Continuing in the Gemara, Ubeplukta Dehani Tanoi, the machlokas that we just referred to, as Rava Brei D'Rava explained, is parallel to the following Tanaic controversy. Disanya, Bomas Yochid Eino Tzricho Nesachim Divrei Rebbe. A private altar does not necessitate the offering of the accompanying wine offering when sacrifices are offered. Now, if you say that, then we don't have any precedent for Nesachim other than through sanctified vessels. Because if Nesachim were not present at private altars, then where were they present? Only at the central altar. And the central altar being in the Mishkan. And as such, there was a necessity for Kedushas Kli. This Shita would parallel then the Shita of Rabbi Elazar Rav Shimon, who said that you need Kedushas Kli for the Nesachim. For Chachomim Omrim, Teuno Nesachim, that the Bomas Yochid, the private altar, does necessitate Nesachim, and therefore we would have precedent for Nesachim being offered in mundane and Kli Chol, in unsanctified vessels. And this opinion would therefore parallel the Tanakama of the previous source, that this Kedushas Kli is not necessary. And if you say that Kedushas Kli is not necessary, therefore when you're dealing with the Isser of Chutz, of outside of Beis HaMikdash offering, there would be a violation, even if you're pouring them from a non-sanctified vessel. Vehani Tanoi Kehani Tanoi. The following Tanoim that we'll see very shortly in a longer Tanaic source. The Tanaic sources in our marking system are identified by the frames that you find around sections of Gemara. The frames serve to distinguish the Tanaic source from the rest of the Gemara. So in the following Tanaic source, we've already presented, you can see through the markings, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva in the middle of the source. They disagree on this very point that the Tanoim we just mentioned, Rebbe, and the Chumim disagree upon. Before we learn the source itself, let's just take advantage of some of the markings that we have and other additional features. On the outside margin, we have a nosei, the topic heading, Machlokes Tanoim Ikorvu Nesachim Bamidbar. We will see a Machlokes Tanoim, another Machlokes Tanoim, concerning the issue of wine offerings being offered in the sojourn, during the sojourn in the desert. Umemela I bomas yochid toun nesochim, and as a result of this issue of whether they offered drink offerings, wine offerings in the Midbar, that will have a direct effect on bomas yochid requiring nesochim. Yesh litzayin, we want to note point aleph 1.1. Ilo korvu b'midbar, if they were not offered in the Midbar, oz bomas yochid eino toun nesochim, the result will be that a private altar will not require nesachim. Umemela, if you say that private altars do not have nesachim, lo motzinu nesachim b'li kli kodesh, then there is no precedent for wine offerings without sanctified vessels. E karvu, second point is e karvu nesachim b'midbar. If nesachim were offered in the Midbar, then oz bomas yochid toun nesachim. Then our conclusion will be that the private altar will require nesachim. And we should point out, once again, as we pointed out earlier, this is a function of the fact that there is a pasuk indicating there's a command of upon entrance to the land, you shall offer nesachim. Now, if they were offering nesachim in the Midbar already, so what's the point of this command? So according to this approach, the command is to inform them that at private altars, you will now offer nesachim. Continuing in our note, v'ein klisharis b'vomas yochid, and there's another given that service vessels, sanctified vessels, were not used at private altars. U'memeilo matzinu nesachim b'kli chol, and as a result of this, you find the wine offerings offered from unsanctified vessels. As we glance in the Gemara itself, the Tanaic source that we noted before, in which you find Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, let's take advantage of, like we call it, the shortcut using the markings. You see two dashed underlined expressions. One, the first one, is right above Rabbi Shmuel's name, and it said there, Hare bebomas habeboma hanoheges lekulchem. That's a reference to the central boma. And that concludes with Rabbi Shmuel. That, in other words, that's Rabbi Shmuel's approach, that the pasuk dealing with the offering of nesachim upon entrance to the land was a command that you'll now offer them at the central boma, indicating that prior to that there were no nesachim in the Midbar. If that's the case, then the only presence of nesachim is at a central boma, which was in the Mishkan, central mizbeach, which is called a bomas tzibur, a central public boma. That's a reference to the Mishkan Mizbeach. And as such, nesachim would come only from sanctified vessels. They would be offered only from klishores. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, also appears in the source, and you see we've dashed underlined toward the end of the source, beboma hanoheges b'chol moshavos. That's a reference to a private boma, a boma that can be used in all locations. As a result of that, Rabbi Kiva will hold that nesachim don't require klei shores. Following from that will be that according to Rabbi Shmuel, who says, according to Rabbi Akiva, we'll go backwards with the second shita first, according to Rabbi Akiva, that says that the command upon entrance to the land indicated they will now offer wine offerings at private bomas, that indicates that prior to that they had been offered in the Midbar. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who says that the command concerning the nesachim upon entering the land was a command focused on the central, on the Mishkan service, that shows us that up till that point they were not offered in the Mishkan, namely in the Midbar during their sojourn in the desert. There were no nesachim offered. Let's now turn to the source. We mentioned that the previous tanoim are parallel to these tanoim. Vahani tanoi kahani tanoi desanya ki savoyu. This is the pasuk indicating that when they enter the land, there will be nesachim offered. L'hat'ino nesachim b'boma g'doylo hakosu medaber. The pasuk is telling us Latino to require nisachim at the central large public altar. Ata oimer b'mama gedolo eino el afilu b'mama ketana. Are you saying that this is a reference to the central bama alone, or maybe the pasuk is commanding even with regard to private altars that, upon entrance to land, they will use they will offer drink offerings nisachim at a private bama? Kishu omer, the answer to that is when the pasuk says el eretz moshev sechem asher ani noisein lochem. Hare bebama hanoheges lekulchem hakosuv medaber divrei Rabbi Shmuel. He understands this pasuk as referring to the bama, the altar that is enjoyed or used by everybody, namely the central bama, and only at the central bama is there a requirement of a wine offering. Rabbi Akiva Omer ki savoyu. Latino nisachim bebama ketana kosuv medaber. According to Rabbi Kiva, the pasuk is a command to require wine offerings at personal altars. Atoimer lebama ketana oino elo lebama gedola. Are you saying only? Is it a reference to include the private altars, or only, or drink offerings, wine offerings are restricted to the central bama? Kishuomer el eretz moshvel sechem. Well, when the pasuk says this expression, Hare bebama hanoheges b'chol moshav esegasu medaber, he takes the expression moshav sechem to mean wherever you happen to be, indicating private bamas. According to the first approach, which we didn't explain before, but according to Rabbi Shmuel, the term moshav sechem was a reference to the, as we mentioned before, the central mizbeach, the public central altar, and moshav sechem when we, after the land was conquered and settled and divided, indicating that upon immediate entrance to land, there still were no wine offerings, according to Rabbi Shmuel. Kishetimsa loymar ledivre b'shmuel, the Gemara points out that as when you analyze Rabbi Shmuel, who said that upon entrance to land there would be nisachim only at the central bama, we can conclude or extrapolate lo kervu nisachim b'midbar. There were no nisachim wine offerings during their sojourn in the desert. Namely, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the whole command about offering nisachim was a command, you will now offer them in the Mishkan. That indicates that prior to that they were not offered at the Mishkan. Hence, lo korvu nisachim b'midbar. Uledivrei Rabbi Akiva, who said that upon entrance to the land, you will now offer the wine offering at the private altars, that indicates korvu nisachim b'midbar, that prior to that, there were nisachim being offered, but they were offered in the Mishkan, in the Midbar. Of course, in the Midbar, there were no private altars. So upon entrance to the land, the new command is a command that goes beyond what they were doing till now. So according to Rabbi Kiva, till now in the Midbar they were offering wine offerings in the Mishkan, and that's what is meant by korvu nisachim b'midbar. And upon entrance to land, the command features something new, including even private altars. And as we mentioned before, when you say that there were wine offerings at private altars, that shows us that kli shores is not necessary. Rabbi Nechemya Olimer, Shiore Hadom Shekrivon Bachutz Chayov. Before we go further, let us glance at the side. We have a no say heading. Shitas Rabbi Nechemya. The opinion of Rabbi Nechemya will be explained now. Dehamakriv shoredam b'chutz chayav, that one who offers the remaining blood after the sacrificial blood was sprinkled on the altar, one who offers the shirayim outside of the Beis HaMikdash is chayav. We'll talk about shirayim chitzoinim, the remnant blood of korbanos that are done in the Azara, standard sin offerings or standard korbanos, and shirayim pnimim, the remnant blood of sin offerings. Specifically sin offerings, because only sin offerings were offered in the Heichal. Their blood was sprinkled in the Heichal, and after that blood sprinkling, the remnant blood is known as Shirayim of Panimim. The Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tana Rabbi Nechemya, Kedivrei Ha'oimer Shiorei Hadam Akvin. Rabbi Nechemya, in our Mishnah, who holds one is guilty if one spills the remnant blood of a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash, holds like the opinion that was featured in Perek Ezu Mekomen, in the fifth Perek of this Masechta, that remnant blood is ma'akev, that it's a binding element of the acceptability of a sacrifice. Namely, that if the shirayim are not offered, so the sacrifice is not considered legitimate. The Gemara now raises a long question. Kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, we have a long question marking, you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled, running down with under that a vertical dash line, indicating that all of the lines of the Gemara that are opposite this vertical dash line form the question. The essence of the question is, we will see Rabbi Nehemiah featured in the following source, but he does not indicate that shirayim are ma'akev. He does talk about shirayim of korbanos, the shiurei dam that one offers outside, as being chayav. However, not on the grounds that shirayim are ma'akev. So as a result of the discussion that follows, we will get the feeling that Rabbi Nehemiah does not hold the position that Rabbi Yochanan claimed he held, that shirayim are ma'akev. Meisvei. Now we read the Gemara. Rabbi Nehemiah Omer, shiorei hadom shekrivon b'chutz chayav. The remaining blood of a korban, after its blood has been sprinkled on the mizbeach, if one offers them, spills that blood outside the Beis HaMikdash, he is guilty of haloas chutz. Omar lo Rabbi Akiva, v'halo shiorei hadam shiorei mitzvahim. Shiorei hadam are considered the remnants of a mitzvah. Namely, it's not the central part of the mitzvah. And since they're considered shiyorei mitzvah, which we indicate they're not ma'akev, the kapara, they're not, the shirayim are not a binding factor in achieving the atonement that a sacrifice affords. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, if they're offered outside the Beis HaMikdash, there should be no guilt accompanying that. Omar lo, so Rabbi Nehemiah responds, in our marking system, when you have a back-and-forth type discussion, we often use a squiggle underline to help you follow who the speaker is. So you see here, and the next line also, another squiggle line, where each one responds to the other. So Omar lo, Rabbi Nehemiah responds, is Evar mufdorim yochichu. Let us use as a point to bolster my position, the issue concerning the limbs and the innards of sacrifices that are offered outside the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what do we know about Evar Muvdorim? Well, we know, one, that Shehein Shiori Mitzvah, namely that if for some reason after the sprinkling of the sacrificial blood takes place, these items, these elements of the sacrifice are lost. The Evar Muvdorim, in other words, if you have a situation that they never come to be offered, they are Shehein Shiorei Mitzvah. Those are examples of Shiorei Mitzvah, meaning non-central aspects of the Mitzvah. Namely, they're not Ma'akev the Kapora. Kapora is only through the sprinkling of the blood. And nevertheless, even though they are of an insignificant sacrificial nature, V'hamakrivon b'chutz chayov. And even so, you would agree that the offering of the Evarim Ufdorim outside the Beis HaMikdash would carry with them guilt. So why is it that you, Rabbi Akiva, hold that since something may be Shiorei Mitzvah, like the case of the Shirayim, that that's not sufficient reason for holding, for establishing guilt? Omar lo, Rabbi Akiva responds, loy. I disagree with your position. Im Amris, Be'evar Mufdorim, if you want to say something, you want to mention Evar Mufdorim as being guilty when offered outside the Beis HaMikdash, she ain't chilas avoida. That is the first time these elements are being dealt with. There's a firstness to them, to the offering of actual animal parts. However, Tomar Bishuri Hadam Sheinon Trilas Avoda, should you try to argue the same thing with regard to the blood, the remnant blood, by definition, it's remnant blood. It's not the beginning of the blood preoccupation. The blood was already dealt with through the sprinkling on the altar. All we're talking about right now is the shiore, the shirayim. That's not chilas avoda of the dam. It's not the beginning of the blood ceremony. And as such, since it's not the beginning, it doesn't have the same significance as evar mufdorim. So at this point, you see that Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Akiva have an argument concerning shiare shirayim. However, Rabbi Nechemya does not answer or argue to Rabbi Akiva what Rabbi Yochanan would have suggested. Ve'imisa, if it is so, like Rabbi Yochanan said, that according to Rabbi Nechemya, shirayim are me'akev, leimo lei, Rabbi Nechemya should have said back to Rabbi Akiva, hani nami me'akvi. These are, in fact, the shirayim are also me'akev. In other words, when Rabbi Kiva, he had said, well, the shirayim are merely shiore mitzvah, Rabbi Nechemya should have come back and said, they're not, it's not shiore mitzvah, the shirayim are ma'akev. Now, since Rabbi Nechemya remained silent, he didn't say that, tiyufta, this would be a repudiation of Rabbi Yochanan's approach. The Gemara continues, though, in looking at this particular machlokes tanoim, and says, "Vahashto the Omar of Ado bar Avo machlokes b'shirayim apnimim." Now that Rav Ado introduces a new factor, that the issue concerning shirayim being ma'akev concerns only the remnant blood of internal sacrifices. Those are sacrifices that are offered in the heichal, in the structure, in the enclosed structure of the Beis HaMikdash. Various different types of sin offerings, like a par helam dover shel tzibor, or the Yom Kippur chatois, or par koyin moshiach, that is the case in which the machlokes tanoim arises, and only there would Rabbi Nechemya say that the shirayim are ma'akev, insofar as the fact that, according to Rabbi Nechemya, all matnas dam, including the shirayim of panimim, are ma'akev. Avol b'shirayim hachitzonim. However, with regard to the external external sacrifices, divrei hakol lo ma'akvi. Everyone will agree. Even Rabbi Nechemya would agree that the shirayim are not ma'akev. With that in mind, we can now say ki ka'omar Rabbi Nechemya. When is it that Rabbi Nechemya said that shirayim b'chutz are ma'akev? That's b'shirayim apnimim. That's with regard to internal sin offering remnant blood. If that shirayim, the shirayim of panimim, are offered bachutz, that would be chayav. Ki tanya hi, where the source in which Rabbi Nechemya was featured as arguing with Rabbi Akiva, where Rabbi Nechemya in effect agreed that we will classify the shirayim ashura mitzvah, that's b'shirayim hachitzonim. That's with regard to external sacrificial remnant blood. Following the text that's suggested on the side, the inside margin, we continue reading, Ihachi, if this be the case, then when Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Nechemya were arguing with one another, Neimole, couldn't Rabbi Nechemya have said to Rabbi Akiva, Ki Amri Ano, when is it that I said they are Ma'akev? Bipnimiyim. They are ma'akev only with regard to the internal sacrifices, the internal sin offerings. And you are trying to suggest that they're not ma'akev. Well, that is true if you're dealing with external sacrifices, where the remnant blood of those is not ma'akev. So, why did that not appear in the discussion? So from the fact that that did not appear in the discussion, it casts a doubt on Rav Ado Bar Ava's conviction that there is a distinction made between the Pnimim and the Chitzonim within Rabbi Nechemya. The Gemara therefore goes on to say, Ela, Lidvorov de Rabbi Akiva Ka'omar. And here we'll look at Rashi, the four lines from the very bottom of Rashi commentary. He says, according to me, says Rabbi Nechemya, shirayim are always ma'akev. Shirayim are always ma'akev, whether it be internal or external remnant blood. L'didcha, nami, da'amris, shiroi mitzvahein, according to you, who holds that there's shiori mitzvah, and as a result of that, you're trying to develop a position that says that if they're offered, if the shram are offered outside, there should be no guilt associated with that. Nevertheless, hekter evarim yochiach. Let another example of shiori mitzvah prove that there should be guilt upon offering, being offered outside the Beis HaMikdash. So according to the conclusion of the Gemara following the girsa that we used and Rashi's commentary, it would seem that what Rav Ada tried to say is not necessarily accepted, is certainly not substantiated in analyzing this particular given take within of Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, it would come out that Rabbi Nechemiah holds, under all circumstances, the Rabbi Chemi's opinion is, under all circumstances, the Shirayim are Ma'akev. What one has to clarify at this juncture would be, how does this point check out with regard to Rabbi Yochanan's original contention? Turning to the Mishnah. Hamolek esof bifnim vehela b'chutz chayav. Before we go any further into this Mishnah, there's a peculiar or particular structure that one would want to note when looking at this Mishnah. This Mishnah deals with Malika and Shechita with regard to a bird offering. Malika and Shechita, where at the end of each section of the Mishnah, there will be an issue of Haloas Chutz. Something, the bird offering will be offered outside the Beis HaMikdash. And the question is, what preceded the Haloas Chutz? And depending on that which preceded the Haloas Chutz, there will either be Chiyuv, a guilt, or possibly exemption, Poptur. Structurally, we have broken down the Mishnah into several parts. We have a Roman numeral number 1 that you can see right here at the beginning of the Mishnah that features the Malika. Where the Malika was done, so that depends. You have, it's under the Roman numeral 1, you'll see Aleph and Beis. In the Aleph example, Malika was done inside, and that word is underlined, Bifnim. And the Beis example has the Malika being done outside. Under Roman numeral number 2, we'll talk about Shechita of an Oif. And again, you'll see in the Aleph, there'll be Shechita of the Oif Bifnim, and that's 2 Aleph and 2 Beis. At the very top of the Amud Beis of the Gemara, you have Shechita of the Oif outside. So as far as procedure is concerned, the Mishnah is very balanced. You have Malika Bifnim, and then Malika Bechutz, and then the Mishnah will talk about Shechita Bifnim, and then Shechita Bechutz. However, as far as the issue of when is there guilt and not, one has to be very careful here with regard to the structure of the Mishnah. One will notice that if we just cited 4 cases, we'll just go over them very rapidly, Malika Bifnim, each case that we mentioned, we have to note, is followed with a Haloa Bechutz. So to keep things simple, we're not going to mention Haloas Chutz each time. But we have Malika Bifnim and then Malika Bechutz. Those are 2 cases. 2 more cases. Shochi Bifnim, Shochi Bechutz. When is there guilt and when is there Ptur? So in the case of Malika, the structure of the Mishnah was, you'll see, it starts off describing Chiyuv and then Ptur. And then with regard to the Mishnah, with regard to Shochet, it describes Ptur and then Chiyuv. So the structure would be, if we say it in a notation form, the structure will be Chayav Potter, Potter Chayav. What we're saying is essentially visible on the charts that we've included in this particular sugya on Amud Beis. And you can see that on the chart that we find on the inside margin. Toward the upper part of the page, there's something called Tavla, and we have Shochat Bachutz, followed by, underneath that, Molak Bachutz, then you have Shochat Bifnim, and then Molak Bifnim. The cases there, you will see the result of each one. But before we get to Amud Beis, let us proceed first with the Mishnah. Hamolek esha'oif bifnim vehelo b'chutz chayav. If one does malika, that's the severing of the bird offering using the thumbnail in the azora, and then the bird is taken out and offered outside the Beis HaMikdash, that carries with it guilt. Molak b'chutz vehelo b'chutz poter. Hashochet esha'oif bifnim, and we should note that shechita, even though that is the way that we allow non-sanctified birds to be eaten, common human birds to be eaten, nevertheless, in the Beis HaMikdash, sacrificial birds were never dealt with through shechita. Shechita is the use of a knife. Rather, they were always done through the malika process. So the Mishnah tells us that if one did shecht, shochet esha'oif bifnim, ve'ela b'chutz, poter. However, shochat b'chutz ve'ela b'chutz, chayav. Nimtza, the result of this is Derech Hechshero Bifnim Potro Bechutz, the way that a bird is supposed to be dealt with inside, namely Malika. If you had Malika Bifnim and then it's offered up outside, or let's say this again, that Malika, which is the proper way of doing it inside, if the Malika is done outside, that was the case of Molak Bechutz. If that were done outside, that's potro b'chutz. That very same procedure, that's the right thing to do inside, if you do it outside, results in exemption. And derech hechsheru b'chutz, the way that birds are dealt with outside on a proper way, namely for mundane bird consumption, non-sacrificial bird consumption, one needs to do shechita. That's derech hechsheru b'chutz. If one does the shechita inside, that's potro mi bifnim. And that was illustrated by the Mishnah in the case of shochat bifnim v'hela b'chutz, that resulted in exemption. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol shechayovin olav b'chutz, chayovin al kayotze bo bifnim, shehela b'chutz. The Gemara will deal extensively with trying to understand what Rav Shimon is trying to accomplish, so for our purposes, we'll just read what he says and then attempt to explain Rabbi Shimon as we go through the Gemara. So Rabbi Shimon gives us a rule, and then he says, Chutz min ha-shochet b'fnim u'ma'le b'chutz, with that exception as being non-guilty. Before we get to the bulk of the Gemara, which focuses on Shitas Reb Shimon, there's one small point, a linguistic issue. The Gemara, the Mishnah, you notice that the second line from the top, there's an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the text. And we've underlined the word Hechshero. There, the Mishnah was describing the Malika process by saying, Derech Hechshero Bifnim. A more accurate expression would be that regarding Malika and inside the Azora, that is obligatory. It should have said that that's the Derech Chiyuvo, the way one is Chayav to behave with a bird offering. One using the word Chayav, here the Gemara says, Hai Hechshero Chiyuvo Hu. Why do you use the expression Hechshero when a more accurate expression would have been Chiyuvo? The issue concerning this word was dealt with by Rashi in his commentary on the Mishnah. On the first narrow line, Rashi says, "Bigamora porach as seifa derech hechshero b'chutz chiyuvo hu de'oiv kotshim ein lo hechsher b'chutz b'shchita." The hachi, that means that chiyuvo is an expression meaning sometimes meaning obligatory and sometimes meaning guilt worthy. So that the chiyuv of an oif kochim, guilt of involving oif kochim, is through malika done outside. So he says chiyuvo hu the oif kochim ein lo hechsher b'chutz b'shchita v'hachi boy lemisni. The Mishnah should have said, Derech Chiyuvo Bachutz, Potro Bifnim. The Derech that one would be Chayav if done outside will exempt him if done inside derech shchita. Namely, that if there's shchitas chutz, that creates chiyuv. If that very same action is done inside, namely shchita inside, and then it's offered up outside, that will be exempt. Derech chiyuvo bifnim, the way one is obligated to deal with the oaf, the bird offering in the azar, namely through malika, potro bachutz, malika. That if one does that very action that he would have been obligated to do inside, he does that action outside, that will cause exemption. So the Gemara is asking on the use of the word hechshero is not appropriate. The word chiyuvo would have been more appropriate, as we just saw through Rashi. So the Gemara answers, Tani chiyuvo. So it replace in the reading of the Mishnah, the word chiyuvo should replace the word hechshero. Rabbi Shimon Omer v'chulei. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin, the nosei mivneh. We have a topic, heading, and structural note combined, where you see a house form appears. Shlavei birur basheila Rabbi Shimon ahechakoi. These house forms represent stages in analyzing on what is Rabbi Shimon's comment focused. We will notice that in the course of the sugya, in the different house forms that appear, some of them have a colored in tip. We've also assigned numbers to these stages of the Gemara, and we can tell you ahead of time that stages 1 and 2, nidhu, will not be accepted. Stages 3 through 5, as possible explanations of what Rabbi Shimon is dealing with, will not be rejected. We'll see a double line, underline appearing in the course of the sugya, and it's at that point that the Gemara will be rejecting. So the word that's featured is high, and those represent the chios. That's the point at which the Gemara will reject the suggestions that we just mentioned. We've also highlighted the expression hochi komar with a diamond, as that will appear a couple of times in the sugya. Hochi komar meaning the way to understand something. So the Gemara opens up with the question of regarding Rabbi Shimon, Ahecha Koi. On what section of the Mishnah is he making his comment? I lemo Aresha Koi. And as we go on in the reading of the Gemara, we have to be cognizant of the different sections of the Mishnah. So we've assigned numberings to help navigate. This will be section 1, Aleph. And the Gemara quotes it. Hamolek of bifnim vehelo bachutz chayav. Molak bachutz vehelo bachutz potter. That's what the Tanakhama said, that malika will result in a chiyuv of halas chutz only if the malika is done inside the Beis HaMikdash. If the malika, however, is done outside, initially is done outside the Beis HaMikdash, then the subsequent ha'alah will not result in guilt. The Omar lay Rabbi Shimon, and upon that statement, Rabbi Shimon responds and says, Ki hechi debifnim mechayev, just like you said that when malika is done inside, there is guilt, bachutz nami mechayev. For malika done outside, there should also be guilt for its subsequent ha'alah. Well, if that happens to be the case, then the existing lashon of Rabbi Shimon is not accurate. Here, the Gemara rejects this suggestion. Hi, kol shechayvim lo bachutz. This is the expression that Rabbi Shimon actually used. It should have said, kol shechayvim olav bifnim mi bo'elei. Let's not forget, Rabbi Shimon, according to the suggestion, was saying, just like you agree in the case of Malika Bifnim and Hela B'chutz is Chayev, you should also concede concerning Malak B'chutz. Therefore, the appropriate language would have been, Kol Shechayavim Lov Bifnim. And yet, Rabbi Shimon does not say that. So apparently, Rabbi Shimon is not a response to that resha of the Mishnah, that very beginning point of the Mishnah. V'ela, so rather, Rabbi Shimon is going on the second phrase of the resha of the Mishnah. We're calling this one beis. We might point out, when we should have done this a bit earlier, that in the first presentation, we included a brackets around the second half of the framed section, namely the section that said Molak b'chutz v'la b'chutz poter, and the brackets that we provided there are simply to show a certain type of de-emphasis on that, as a setup for this section. This is now the base section of that, of the resha. So the Gemara continues and says, V'ela, ki hechi debachutz lo mechayev. Just like you, the Tanakama, said that if there was molak bechutz and hela bechutz, there's no chiyuv. Bifnim nami lo mechayev. You should have said, says Rabbi Shimon, according to this suggestion, that if you did Malika Bifnim, and then Halabahu should also not be Chayav. The Gemara rejects this as well, that Rabbi Shimon is not going on that one Bays section, because again, linguistically, it doesn't fit in. Hi, kol she'ein Chayavan olav mi boyalei. Rabbi Shimon's statement should be, if Rabbi Shimon is going in the direction of exemption, he should have said, any case that's not chayav bachutz. But he didn't say that. Rabbi Shimon said, kol shechayoven alav bachutz. Therefore, to suggest, like we're doing in this one bays section, that Rabbi Shimon is commenting on that, namely, that where the Tanakama offered partial exemption, Rabbi Shimon is trying to raise, to establish a complete exemption, on both cases, that is not the case. Once again, it's way linguistically, it doesn't check out. V'elo aseifa koi. So the new suggestion is that Rav Shimon is going on what we call 2 aleph. Hashoche oif bifnim v'helo b'chutz poter. Shochat b'chutz v'helo b'chutz chayov. The Omar lay Rabbi Shimon ki hechi debifnim lo mechayev, and this is again a suggestion. And Rabbi Shimon is, maybe he is saying that just like bifnim, you the Tanakama holds there is exemption, namely if shechita is done bifnim and then subsequently hela b'chutz is not chayev, b'chutz nami lo mechayev. So too, if there's shechita done outside and then subsequent halal outside, there should be no guilt. Maybe that's what Rav Shimon is responding to. In other words, maybe that's what Rav Shimon is trying to say in the rule that he presents in the Mishnah. The Gemara rejects this, once again on the grounds, the linguistic grounds. Hi, kol she'ein chayovim mibayalei. If Rav Shimon is trying to establish, we'll say, an across-the-boards exemption, across-the-boards with regard to shechita exemption for halas chutz, then he should have opened his phrase with kol she'ein chayovim, all cases that are not chayov bifnim would be exempt also if done outside. But he doesn't say that. Rav Shimon spoke about kol she'chayovim. Ela, now another suggestion, Ela, and this suggestion is focused on 2 bays. In 2 bays, we saw the Tanakama say that shochat b'chutz v'la b'chutz is chayav, and as opposed to the case of shochat b'fnim v'la b'chutz, Rabbi Shimon would come along and say ki hechi d'b'chutz mechayav, just like in the case of shochat b'chutz and hela b'chutz is chayav, b'fnim nami mechayav. Then b'fnim also, if he was shochat the bird in the azara and then subsequently offered it outside, there should also be guilt. And that would fit in, at least with the lashon of Rabbi Shimon that said kol shechayoven in the positive, in that all cases that there is guilt. So, what does the Gemara respond to this? The Gemara says this is now a rejection. you can't offer this suggestion because ha katani. But Reb Shimon himself actually says chutz min hashochet bifnim ve'amale b'chutz. Reb Shimon concedes that that very case is in fact exempt. So you cannot suggest that Reb Shimon's comment is trying to create an across the boards guilt for shchita, whether bifnim or b'chutz, because Reb Shimon himself says that the case of shochet bifnim amale b'chutz in fact is exempt in that sense. Agreeing with the Tanakama. At this point then, what is Reb Shimon's comment focused on? Omar Ze'iri, Shchitas Laila Behema Ika Binayu. The approach that Ze'iri is taking is an approach that is often known as the Chisure Mechasra approach. And Rashi points that out in his commentary that the Mishnah is brief, and there's information that was left out, so to speak, on in terms of a printed form, but should be understood in the Mishnah. Chisurei Mechasur, in other words, the Mishnah was left brief or left with missing information, but is to be understood. And according to Ze'iri, that concerns the offering. That the Mishnah is also dealing with behema offerings. Up till now, the Mishnah was seemingly focused on bird offerings, so now there's new information that's added, and as we go on in the Gemara, the understanding of the Mishnah, according to Ze'iri, will be featured after the diamond, Hochi Ko'omar, in a frame. And with this, we will then be able to see more clearly the point of difference between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon. In other words, what Reb Shimon is trying to accomplish. So back in the Gemara, Omar Ze'iri, Shchitas Laila Bevehemo Iko Binayu. The point of difference between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon will be a case where an animal, as opposed to a bird, an animal sacrifice is slaughtered at night, and then subsequently that sacrifice is offered outside the Beis HaMikdash. V'hochi Komar, and thusly we should understand the Mishnah. And what we see here is the Gemara's approach, Aziri's approach to the understanding of the Mishnah, with Rabbi Shimon's name featured and circled within this framed section. V'chein hashoyche behemo bifnim balayla elo bachutz poter. And similar, when we say similar, coming off the case of the bird, where we saw in the case of the bird, shochet bifnim amale b'chutz is poter, so too, if one slaughters a behema inside at night, nighttime is not an appropriate time for sacrificial activity, for the most part. If one sacrificed a behema in the Beis HaMikdash at night and then offered it outside, poter, shochet b'chutz velo b'chutz, chayov. If, once again, shochat b'chutz balayla, if one slaughtered a behema offering, an animal offering at night outside the Beis HaMikdash and offered it up, that would be chayav. Rabbi Shimon comes with a stricter opinion and says, kol shechayovin olav b'chutz. Any case that there would be guilt outside, and that would be like case Beis, where there was shochat b'chutz balayla, Chayovim al kayyotze boi bifnim ve'al b'chutz. There is also guilt in the case of someone doing a similar activity, namely shchitas behema balayla, inside the azara, and then subsequent offering up of the animal outside the azara. Chutz, and we have to bear in mind that this presentation of Reb Shimon will fit in linguistically with what the Mishnah was saying, or the way the Mishnah presented Reb Shimon, namely kol shechayoven chutz min hashochet oif bifnim ve'lo b'chutz, with the exception of the slaughtering of a bird inside and then subsequent offering outside. There's a contrast, namely that even though if the bird is shechted outside and hello outside, there would be guilt. There, nevertheless, if it's shechted inside and then offered up outside, there is innocence. Rava Omar Kabbalah Bikli Choyol Iko Binayu. Rava says the point of difference between Tanakam and Shimon will be the receipt of the blood, of sacrificial blood, in an non-sanctified vessel. And once again, you can see we'll present the machloikis in the Mishnah in a chisuri mechsura fashion. In other words, the information provided here will be something that the Mishnah in its current form doesn't have in it, but it is to be understood. And Rabbi Shimon's dissenting opinion will be featured. Also, you can see his name is circled. So thusly, the Mishnah should be understood. V'chein, ha-makabel b'kli chol b'fnim ve'elo b'chutz poter. If blood of the sacrifice was received in an unsanctified vessel in the Azar and then subsequently offered up outside, that carries with it an exemption. However, ha-makabel b'kli b'chutz ve'elo b'chutz chayav. The same action done outside the Beis Hamikdash, Kabbalah Saddam was done outside in a Kli Chol, that would not be source of an exemption, but rather carry with it guilt. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Kol Shechem L'Bechutz, any case where there would be guilt outside, like you just said, like the Tanakhama just said, regarding Mekabel B'Kli Chol B'Chutz, and a subsequent Halal B'Chutz is Chayav, Rabbi Shimon says, Al Kayotse Bo Bifnim Ve'Lo B'Chutz is also going to be Chayav. Let's read that again. Kol Shechayim Lo B'Chutz Chayavim Al Kayotse Bo Bifnim Ve'Lo B'Chutz. If that same thing were done inside with a subsequent offering up outside, would also be guilty. And therefore, the Kabbalah Saddam and the Kli Chol Bifnim and subsequent offering up outside, Rabbi Shimon says, will be guilty, unlike the Tana Kama. Chutz min ha-shechet ha-bifnim ve'lo b'chutz. The exception to Reb Shimon's rule is Reb Shimon suggests that an exception to my own rule is in the case of shechitas of b'fnim, where there we say that even though there's a chiyuv of shechitas oif and halo b'chutz, when the shechita takes place outside, there is guilt. That same action, shechitas of b'fnim and halo b'chutz, will in fact be exempt. And now a fifth approach. V'hashta d'toni avua d'shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok. Now that we have the following Tanaic teaching presented by avua d'shmuel, hamoylek oif bifnim v'helo bachutz chayov molak bachutz v'helo bachutz poter. Rabbi Shimon Mechayev. According to this presentation of Rabbi Shimon, it's very clear what Rabbi Shimon is going on. Rabbi Shimon is going on this Tanakama that said, the Tanakama who had said that Molak Bachutz Olachutz is Potter, Rabbi Shimon is saying that that case will be Chayev. Rabbi Shimon Hosam Koi. Rabbi Shimon is going on that, on the case of Molak Bachutz Vela Bachutz. Utni, and say in Reb Shimon's rule, Kol Shechayovin Olov Vifnim. Now at this point, there is a difference. This is where the Chidush is coming in, as far as the structure of, or the linguistics of the Mishnah are concerned. Instead of saying what appears in the original Mishnah of Kol Shechayim Achutz, rather say this, that which we have in a frame. Utni Kol Shechayovin Olov Vifnim Vehelo Bechutz. Chayovim olav bachutz. This would be the more accurate way of learning the Mishnah. Let's go over this last point. Since Reb Shimon is saying that molak bachutz ela bachutz is potter, and that would be coming off the first case of molak bifnim ela bachutz, Reb Shimon's rule would therefore be kol shechayovim lo bifnim ela bachutz. Any case where there is a chiyuv bifnim, for example, the case of molak bifnim and hel b'chutz, which you, the Tanakama, said is chayav, I want you to know chayav al b'chutz, if your molak b'chutz al b'chutz, would also be chayav. Mishnah. Chata shikibol domo b'kois echod. Before we go on, we have a new geometric form that we want to take note of. On the outside margin of our Nosei Mivne heading, we see a volcano form, or trapezoid. Kabolas dam chatos, the receiving of the sin offering blood after it's slaughtered, b'kois echad, or b'shnei koisos, in one receiving vessel, or if the dam is received in two separate vessels. Matnus dam bifnim bachutz. And we'll also see the Mishnah make reference to the blood applications inside and outside. The Mishnah. Chatos shikibal domo b'kois echot. The chatos blood, whose blood was received entirely in one vessel. What does he do? Nosan b'chutz v'chozer v'nosan b'fnim. If he did a blood application outside the Beis HaMikdash and then a subsequent application on the altar inside the Azorah, b'fnim v'chozer v'nosan b'chutz, or he does an application in the Azorah and then a subsequent one outside, chayav, he is guilty in both of these cases, shekulo roi lovo b'fnim, because all of the blood in that vessel was fit to be offered inside. And as the rule goes, that which is fit to be brought inside and is done outside, one is guilty of haloas chutz. Kibel domo b'shtei koisos. Another case where the dam was received, the blood was received in two separate vessels. Nosan shneim b'fnim poter. That in and of itself doesn't carry with it any major chiddush, but it's a lead up to the next point. Shnehem b'chutz chayav. If both koisos were offered up outside, there was a blood application done outside the azora, there would be guilt. Echad b'fnim v'echad b'chutz poter. Here the order is important. If there was an initial blood application from one kois inside, the second kois is considered nidche, is considered out of the picture, so to speak, and hence it's not something that's needed anymore, and therefore if it's done outside, it's not chayev. It doesn't create any chiyuv. Echad b'chutz v'echad b'fnim, where the first kois blood was offered outside. So that, of course, is no good. That's you're dealing here with blood that should have been brought inside. It was done outside. The second kois was offered inside. Chayav al achitzon, the first cup which was applied outside, one is guilty for halos chutz because that should have been done inside. Vapnimi mechaper, but the second kois will afford atonement, where the owner will fulfill his sacrificial requirement with the blood used from the second kois. L'mad over doime, to what can this be compared? L'mafrish chatosoi v'ovdo, the example of one who had set aside a sin offering and it got lost, the hifrish achiris tachtel, and set aside a replacement animal, the achakach nimtzeis rishoino vareshtein oindois, and then before offering the replacement animal, the original lost one was found, and now both are standing in front of him. Shochat shtein b'fnim poter. If he slaughters both of them in the azara, he carries. There is no problem. Shtehen b'chutz chayov. If he does both of them outside the azora, outside the Beis HaMikdash, he will be guilty. Achas b'fnim v'achas b'chutz poter. If the first slaughtering was done inside and the second one outside, poter. Achas b'chutz v'achas b'fnim chayov al achitzona. He's going to be chayev for shchitas chutz with regard to the first animal. The first one was done outside. V'apnim is mechaperes, and the second animal will afford the atonement. This piece of Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah, is going on the case where he was shochat shteim b'fnim, where he had these two sin offerings, the original one and the replacement one. Kishem shedoma poter es besara, just like the sprinkling of the blood allows the meat of that of the first one to be eaten, kachi poter es besar chaverta. If we glance at the Rashi at the lower part of the page, kishem shedoma poter es besara min hameila, just like the sprinkling of the blood of the first sacrifice removes the Me'ila violation from it, Me'ila being the prohibition of benefiting from sanctified items. But once the Zrikas Adam is done, the sprinkling of blood is done, so that removes the Me'ila. Tzrikas dam motzia basur k'chei kochim minamila. Dohaya ba shas hetu l'kohanim. The rule says that once something achieves allowance for the kohanim, which in fact is the case after the zrikas adam is done for any given sacrifice, that's called it becomes mutter for the kohanim. At that point, the meila prohibition is rescinded. Kach hi poiteres es besach averta v'afapisha psula. It also removes the mi'ila prohibition from the second unnecessary sacrifice sin offering, even though it's psula, even though it's an invalid korban at this point. So once the owner receives his atonement through one animal, the second one becomes unnecessary. Nevertheless, the fact that the zrikas adam was done for the first one, the mi'ila prohibition is removed. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.